The views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Herndro Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Herndro Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Herndro's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Herndro Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you! Ha, 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 ha!
It is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way, then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories. Watch them
flee. Ladies and gentlemen, this time is Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
Ah, there we are. Had a little trouble finding the talk button there tonight, folks. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow congressmen, once again to the Politics Cafe at www.herndro.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And fresh topics aplenty we have got tonight, folks. Lots going on. Obama's trying to push the economy. Had a hell of a rally going on down in Washington, D.C., a la Glenn Beck. Definitely going to get into a little bit of that in a little bit. Pakistan still got its floods cooking over there. All kinds of good stuff to talk about here tonight, folks. But I really wanted to start off with talking to all my liberal friends in Massachusetts there. You guys down in Washington, D.C., I think have sent the message. And the message is that we want honor back in this country. I want to thank Glenn Beck for everything he did. No, yours truly did not make it down there. I was threatening to and doing all I could, but due to an illness in the family, I did travel down to Philadelphia, and for all of you who gave the well wishes and prayers for my father, thank you very, very much. They are working. He is getting much better, coming right along. And it's good to see the old boy up and doing things. He's eating well and disconnected from all the equipment and all, and really looking good. I'm glad to see he's coming around. I'm going to get the cat off the keyboard here. Here we go. And, what a weekend I had. But what a weekend I had down there. Evidently, Al Sharpton tried to have a bit of a counter march going on, and, didn't quite work out for Al Sharpton. Maybe a couple of thousand people show up. But, folks, I would urge you all to take a wander over while you're listening here to glennbeck.com and take a peek at the pictures. Folks, I didn't think you could get stuff more people into Washington than we did back on 9/12 in 2009. But I'll tell you what, he did. There was no two ways about it. The mall was jammed. He's supposed to come out tomorrow with some kind of account. One thing that's funny, none of the news stations out there came anywhere near. Everybody said thousands and thousands of people. And that was as far as they were going to go. Now, yours truly. I took a look at the pictures. Analysis on it yet. And I'll sit down and I'll actually do what I'll do on this computer is I'll take the pictures and block them out. And I mean, there's a way to do this when you're counting crowds, something I learned in math class years and years and years ago. And it's not a hard thing to do. It really isn't. I mean, all you got to do is just count a small portion of the crowd and put a square around it. And then count how many squares you got. It's not hard. You know, it really isn't. You know, as I've said before, as a musician, you know, and usually getting paid as per who's at the, how many people came through the door, you know, you want to get a good idea how much money you're making to make sure that the place that you're working at isn't ripping you off, you know, which is something that does happen once in a while. It's just one of them kind of things, part of the trade, you know. Generally, if, you know, and you always got to watch if they insist on putting their man at the door. You know, one of the things that, that most bands will do is put their own boy at the door, make him collect the money coming through. It keeps everybody honest. But, you know, it's just a method of counting crowds. But Beck seemed to have done quite a job. But for all you folks up here and for all the liberals around the country, prepare if it's showing to be some huge changes in Washington, D.C. in November. This ejection election that is coming along here is going to prove, if nothing else, things are going to change. Make no mistake about that. I definitely think you're going to see more of a conservative bent to the Congress. Now, whether or not the Congress goes to Republicans, that could be another story. I still say that you're going to see a lot more independents in there who are going to be answering to nobody. You know, looking out there, you're seeing more and more regular businessmen trying to get their way in there. Now, there's, and for good reasons, too. Now, one of the things that I have coming down off the news here tonight, and I'm going to go through this article a little bit by bit, and this is one of those, it's by Rachel Rose Hartman, and she's a politics reporter for actual Yahoo News, and that's where I got this down off of today. It's not one of the major news wires out there, which I'm connected to all of them, but Let me come right off here. President Obama today sought to refocus the White House's efforts to shore up the U.S. economy with a pledge to extend tax cuts for Americans earning less than $200,000 per year. Now, the president remained silent about the fate of Bush-era tax cuts to wealthier Americans while also issuing a plea to Republicans to reach across the partisan aisle to ease passage of a small business jobs bill he argues is crucial to the nation's recovery. I ask Senate Republicans to drop the blockade, Obama said during a Rose Garden address today. I know we're entering election season, but the people who sent us here expect us to work together to get things done and improve this economy. Now, Obama highlighted the small business bill as one initiative among several aimed at promoting growth and hiring in the short term, while increasing competitiveness in the long term, quote unquote. The administration indicated that the White House will be rolling out a series of new economic initiatives in the coming weeks. Now, here's a look at the individual measures and how they may affect your own economic bottom line. Now, though the president has been focused on allowing the Bush tax cuts to languish, he confirmed Monday that he does support extending tax cuts for the middle class. But defining who is and is not middle class is a thorny political dilemma, one that the White House and Democratic leaders aren't about to wade into during an election cycle in which voters are already sharply divided over how and whether the government should aid in an economic recovery. Nevertheless, some tax experts note that the $250,000 annual threshold for middle-class household gives a wide berth to the upper end of the middle class, and that the existing scheme of middle-class tax cuts still disproportionately skews to the advantage of higher earners, an imbalance that will continue if the cuts are preserved in their present state. Citing an analysis from the Joint Committee on Taxation, Chuck Maher and Jillian Brunet of the Committee on Budget and Policy Priorities note that the existing middle-class cuts benefit not only people whose incomes fall within the lower brackets, but also those whose incomes exceed those brackets. In fact, high-income people actually receive much larger benefits in dollar terms from the so-called middle-class tax cuts than the middle-class people do. Now, we're going to get into that. A joint committee figures show that a household earning more than $200,000 would get $6,300 on average under the extension of the present cuts, while families making between $50,000 and $7,500 would rate an average of $1,132. Now, let's just stop here for a second and parse this out a little bit. There's a problem with this. Of course, monetarily wise, it's going to make a big difference. But somebody between $50,000 and $75,000, all right, is making approximately one-fifth of someone making $250,000. All right, now, They're saying here that the $250,000 person is going to average $6,300 or would get it. All right, well, the fact of the matter is this is something that they are already earning. All right, you know, this is the point about some of these articles that really gets to you. You know, these people make it look like someone is getting something for nothing. You know, or someone is getting something on the backs of someone else, which nothing could be further from the truth. You know? Yeah, exactly. Pox, you hit the nail right on the head. What they're not telling you here is how much each of these people make in tax, or how much each people are actually paying in taxes. The guy paying between $50,000 and $75,000 is probably paying less than $10,000 a year. Alright, the guy is probably paying close to $50,000 or $60,000 a year. You know, it's a big duh there. You know, you really got to take a look at this in a hard fashion. Now, that guy that's making the $260,000 or $250,000 a year, or combined income for a family, alright, that's your average skilled worker. You know, it's your average small business owner that's turning those kind of, numbers. You know? Crippling him and his income at this point in time is not a way to boost the economy. All right, taking that money out of him is getting rid of what he calls discretionary income. All right, and it's income that he is going to have to make decisions over. He's got his bills to pay just like everybody else. He's got his mortgage and or his rent. All right, you know, and or the rent on his business. He's still got to pay his utilities, which is something that's going up all the time. Still got to pay his loans. He's still got to do everything else just like the rest of us. You know, and if he's putting a kid through college, there's another huge burden sitting on him right now. Which, let's face it, you know, once you're making that kind of money, there is nothing available for you to put your kids through college. You know, there are no student loans available or, you know, a host of other items out there. They're just going to turn around and say, you know, you're making too much money. See you later. Bye. You pay. All right? So it's a much larger burden. All right. Exactly. They want some form of redistribution. Well, you know, you can look at this as redistribution, but I'm not. All right? And I'm telling you what I think that they're out to do here. All right, because you got to look at this. One of the things that they go on here and say is that it's approximately 4% of the people who are making $250,000 a year or more. Okay, according to the IRS, 4% of Americans earn more than $200,000 a year. And, you know, they go on to say here that, you know, they're looking to shore up the tax coffers with this. Well, they're not going to do it. You know, not with 4% of the population. It's not going to happen to shore up the tax coffers. As a matter of fact, you know, some of the taxes will probably end up going down. Reason being, because of the income that would have come from the taxes paid out in discretionary income. Bought from other people who would have been selling it and paying income taxes on what they're selling or what they're producing for it. So it's not really a good way to move things along here. You know, and by no means would you ever, you know, ever begin to call this fair. You know, not by a long shot could you begin to call this fair. Excuse me, but the point here is that what they're trying to do with these tax cuts, more than anything else, is shore up the voting base. Any way you look at it, if he can turn around and say that he has saved the tax cuts for everyone under $200,000 a year, well, what they're hoping for is the other 96% of the economy to turn around and vote Democrat in the next elections. I mean, that's really what it's all about. These are vote-getting schemes. You know, never forget my position on Democrats, all right? These are power-hungry people, okay? They are people who want to be in charge. They are control freaks, all right? And if they are not in control, then they look at everybody else as being out of control. If you are out of control, then you are something to be feared, you know. Instead of being revered for the service that you are performing for the economy, you know, for bringing mankind forward on your shoulders, now you are someone that now has to be scared of people like that because you never know what they're going to do. Look at the mess they make of the environment, you know, which is always where they push this. You know. I got to admit, with coming back with, well, you know, left to its own, capitalism destroys the environment. No, give it up. All right, give it up. It's not capitalism that destroys the environment. It's people who destroy the environment through their own greed. All right, it's not capitalism that does this. just a sick excuse. But at any rate, all it is, it's a flank attack here. You know, if you wish to see the economy get moving again, and you literally are going to have to understand something. You know, most of you liberals out there don't produce any actual goods or services for the economy. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't any libs that don't. No. There are a lot of libs out there that I admire for being in some of the businesses that they are in. You know, they have small restaurants. I know people that grind coffee, that make their own beer, that do all kinds of neat stuff that actually produce a good or a service for the economy that has a real value that people pay them for. And I admire them for it. You know, I don't have a problem with it. You know, for the most part, these are people who think that the Democrats are okay, that like the Democrats because they have some innate hatred of the super rich, which I can understand, not because it's correct, but because it's been brainwashed into their heads through every damn thing in the media over the last 50 years. But the point of the matter is here, they at least have the right idea. You know, so I'm not going to sit here and say, all you libs are like that. No, all not, but there are many of you that are. You know, many of you that spend 6 years to go to college and then go out and get a job with the government somewhere and produce no real goods or services, or get a real job in the government where you have to produce absolutely nothing whatsoever, not even any results. And you guys know who you are, you know. You're doing important busy work, or at least it's important to you, or whoever the hell it is that is paying you. But the fact of the matter is, you do not produce any wealth. You are the consumers of the wealth that is produced by others. You know, it's, And the fact of the matter is, yes, desperate. All right, now, it goes on here. This bill, the $30 billion legislation is offering tax breaks. Now, I don't know how they come up with a $30 billion figure. To owners of small businesses and expands loan programs to such businesses. Now, Democrats say the bill provides necessary incentives for small businesses to increase spending and hiring. Now, Republicans oppose the measure, citing the harmful effect of adding another $30 billion to the national debt. This past July, GOP senators also indicated that they were withholding support because Democrats would not allow Republicans to introduce some key amendments. Republicans also protest that Democrats have repeatedly set aside this bill and have not made it a priority. Some reports suggest that small businesses are holding back spending and hiring until the legislation clears Congress. Republicans such as House Minority Leader John Boehner have repeatedly argued that the administration is to blame for scaring small businesses. And he's absolutely right. You know, when small businesses are in a quandary, wondering what the hell is going to happen next, you cannot expect them to make any large capital expenditures. Well, yeah. You know, they're holding on, and you see this more and more and more in a lot of businesses going on around here. You know, I'm talking to quite a few business owners out here right now, and it's just time to tell me, you know, they're hanging on, they're doing okay. For the most part, they're able to. And a lot of things that they might have done before, they're not really too ready to do now. And no need to get into that. You guys all know what I'm talking about. It's a scary situation. They are, you know, they're moving along, but as far as bringing in new products, investing in new machinery, hiring new people, expanding the business, they're just too unsure about where the hell things are going here. And they got a point in it. And on top of this, of course, you got to stop and think about the 30. Now, on top of this. And I would give the Republicans this reason also. If the government has to go out and invest money in small businesses, you know, what does that say about the viability of a small business? You know, let me tell you a little bit about the rich, you know, per se. You know, the rich are rich for good reasons. And generally, one of the reasons a lot of rich people get rich is because they make wise investments. You know, they make investments in businesses out there that they believe are going to perform, are going to give them a return on their investment. Now, their experience is what counts the most. You know, most of the people who have made it have had a few failures along the way, and generally have invested in some businesses and managed to lose money. You know, this is something that generally happens to damn near everyone. I'm not going to say it's happened to all of them, but they all learn from their mistakes. You know, they all learn, you know, after a good while, which businesses go ahead and which businesses do not. And I'm here to tell you that if private money finds its way into a business, it is much more likely to be a business that will be profitable, that will be sustainable, and will move forward into the future. You know, will be successful. If it can't find the private money, then stepping in and giving it public money is probably throwing good money after bad. Now, of course, the government, you know, this has always been another one of my contentions here, is also looking to get everyone involved in the debt scheme. You know, this is a big thing. A lot of this isn't going to come out here as business investments. You know, their business investments are going to be looked at as loans. All right? And that's a whole other world, because a loan has to be paid back one way or another. You know, you can't write off a small business loan that has failed. Something is going to be taken in the process. You know, there will be some collateral that's going to be picked up here. There's going to be some arrangements made for you to end up having to pay off that loan one way or another. There's a bankruptcy clause that have gone on there, which didn't cover just credit cards. It covered a whole slew of items out there. Small business loans are included in this. There will be ways that these people will have of recovering their money. All right, now, at that point in time, I don't look at that as an investment at all. You know, the only guy making an investment here is the guy he's got on the line taking out the small business loan. Now, I don't believe that those are good terms. I don't think it's smart. You know, if those business loans are available to everyone, they're going to be available to most that fail. Let's face it, within the first 5 years, 75% of all business startups generally fail anyway, even in a good economy. You know, most businesses don't plan to fail. Many of them fail to plan, and that's a big reason for it. No getting around that. This is what happens. You know, this is all part of the economy. When these businesses fail, money is lost. Startup money is lost. Now, wouldn't it be smarter to spread that loss among people who could afford it and who are probably in a better position to make the decision on which ones are going to start or fail right from the get-go with their investment money, you know, and just throw it willy-nilly at every single little small business owner that comes along that's got a good credit rating. You know, he may have a good credit rating because he may be very faithful in paying his bills. He may be very dedicated to making sure he takes care of stuff. He's a very responsible person. But a responsible person doesn't necessarily have a seed on a business venture. You know, the two don't necessarily go hand in hand. You know, it doesn't really work that way in the real world here. Generally, believe it or not, it's the lazier people who were probably going to have a better chance of moving. You know, the lazier people, or the successful lazier people, are the smartest ones. You know, they will move along, but it's up to them to go out and find their own financing. It's going to be up to them to go out and find the people who are willing to do this. You just can't walk into a bank and say, here, you know, I want them to fund my idea because it's a good idea. And why look at credit ratings? Let's have at it. You know, now I'm here to tell you that since 75% of most business startups do fail in the first 5 years, what are we going to do to our tax coffers if we expand by $30 billion the amount of money that we are going to ship into small businesses? You know, where is the sense in that? Excuse me, but you're talking about $30 billion that you're going to lend out, and $22 billion that you probably will never get back, but will still end up having to pay the interest on. And who's going to end up paying the interest on that? You and me, folks. The taxpayers. The bills will end up having to get paid. And mistake about it. You know, they're going to find themselves in the same positions as Goldman Sachs found itself with all those mortgages, as everybody else on Wall Street at the end of 2008. Remember all those ones that we, you know, should have allowed to fall by the wayside, should have allowed them to have been taken over by their bondholders and restructured along more profitable lines. And instead of bailing out the old dogs in there that were making so many mistakes for such a long time, off it'll go. Now, of course, here we go. We get back to this article here, the last paragraph. Never fails. This is what you're going to find. Now, they want to invest in clean energy, infrastructure, and R&D. Now, a good chunk of the money from the 2009 stimulus package went to clean energy programs, infrastructure, and research and development. with infrastructure investment alone making up more than $105 billion of the $787 billion total. Those expenditures were supposed to stimulate job growth and haven't shown strong results in a struggling labor economy. These funds will also soon expire, leaving future prospects uncertain in labor-intensive industries such as construction and energy. Now the administration is pressing Congress to commit more money so that the momentum built by the stimulus spending won't lapse. Well, there has been no momentum built up. Sorry. It hasn't really worked out to a momentum. Although, despite one thing, and I will admit this, in traveling around up and down the northeastern corridor here and around New York City and a lot of other places over the last couple of weeks, I have seen a lot of signs about the stimulus money being at work fixing up roads. And I have seen a lot of it happening fixing up the railroads and whatnot, too. Gotta admit that. I can't sit here and say that there's nothing going on or they're not doing anything with it. You know, because some of it is going out there. And that's, you know, that's one of the kind of things. It's going to be a good thing in the long run, no doubt about it. You know, but was it necessary to bring it out of the stimulus plan? Well, that, I think, is another story. You know, I firmly believe that the stimulus was just the wrong thing to do at the wrong time. You know, and if you're going to go about investing in infrastructure, well, there are other ways to do it. You know, the infrastructure in this country, for the most part, especially when you're talking about roads and whatnot, is all something that was done with bonds a whole, for a long, long, long time. Bonds that borrowed money and stretched the payment of that money out years and years and years. You know, and it was a very, very smart way of doing things. You know, the Federal Highway Administration, before it changed its name and its acronym to with this current administration, actually changed under, you know, really did a good job of paying off its bonds and taking care of the streets and roads, at least on the federal level. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the federal highways were all in damn good shape. There wasn't an interstate out there that you had problems on. You know, you really didn't, at least not, you know, problems as far as how well they're built or how fast you can travel on them, you know, how well they moved along, and the rest of the design factors going into it. They didn't have a problem with their bonds. If, you know, you could always go over and take a look at their website and see penny for penny where they spent their money at. You know, and a good chunk of the money that they were taking in through road taxes, through gasoline taxes, through tolls, through the host of myriad of other ways that excise taxes on tires, and weight, commercial registration fees, all of that, it was taken in, went to retire the bonds. So it's a very successful capitalist way of doing things. You know, make no mistake about it. Of course, it was paid for by all of us, but, you know, it was only paid for by each of us when we put down these roads. You know, so what if it added a few pennies to the prices of your lettuce and your tomatoes and the other fruits and vegetables and meats that weren't grown locally and they still had to get to the store on a truck? You know, point of the matter is here that it was paid for on a much more of a pay-as-you-go and, much fairer basis, you know, instead of just spreading it willy-nilly out amongst all the taxpayers. So I think it was a bad way to go. At any rate, for this one here, I got to close it down. I'm actually running a little late for this time slot. Folks, we're going to take a short break right now. We'll be right back. Take a wander over to HearnCo.com or over to GlennBeck.com. Take a look at the pictures. And we'll be right back. You are listening to the Politics Cafe at www.HearnCo.com. The best in Internet talk radio. Be right back, folks.
welcome back, folks. You're listening to the Politics Cafe, www.hermco.com. All right, moving upwards and onwards here in the news. Got a little more to cover here, and I got to carry it away on the economy once again. The United States, beginning Wednesday, will add a third Predator drone to patrol its border with Mexico, allowing authorities for the first time to monitor the entire stretch of land separating the two neighbors using unmanned aircraft, which I wasn't aware we were using any up there. The latest drone joins two others in covering the 2,000-mile frontier, which runs across the states of California, Arizona, New Mexico, in Texas. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security, a hot-button issue ahead of looming midterm elections in November. U.S. President Barack Obama earlier this month signed a $600 million bill aimed at reinforcing border security. His administration is helping to step up security as it presses for a comprehensive immigration reform measure that likely would allow many of the illegal immigrants in the United States to legalize their status. Now, many Republicans and lawmakers say no immigration can ensure security along the southern U.S. border. To prevent a spillover from Mexico's crime-ridden north and to prevent the arrival of more undocumented migrants, the United States, which is deeply concerned by the raging drug war in its southern neighbor, deployed 1,200 National Guard soldiers and 1,500 new agents to the border in recent weeks, as provided for in the recent legislation. Homeland Security Chief Janet Napolitano said the first unmanned aerial system flight from Corpus Christi in Texas would mean the whole border from California to Texas was now covered. With the deployment of a UAS in Texas, DHS unmanned aerial capabilities will now cover the Southwest critical aerial surveillance assistance to personnel on the ground, she said. Well, folks, one of them little things in the news here you're not going to hear from the right wing. And I hate to say this, but this is one you're going to have to give a little bit of applause to Obama and the Democrats for. Not that I would give them much for any other idea, but yeah, look, let's face it. What's the one thing that has been foremost on, you know, and nonpartisan here? Is these illegal immigrants that are coming up here. Now, of course, the Democrats are going to have to paint themselves into a corner by trying to legalize all of the millions of illegal immigrants that are already here. But the fact of the matter is, any push in that direction is going to mean that you get more and more and more of them screaming across. I mean, let's face it, what happened to, you know, when we provided amnesty for them before, you know, when Ronald Reagan declared it and figured, well, we can declare it for all the ones that are here now, and then we'll see what happens, you know, we'll just shut the borders down. Well, they never really shut the border down. Next thing you know, that declaration basically caused a flood of them to come over the border, increased by millions the amount of illegal immigrants that are here. And it's and I'm here to tell you, folks, that baby, those numbers are much bigger than you would think, all around this country. It's, you know, I am personally am beginning to witness this more and more and more, even out in the remotes, in the rural areas of the world, you know, where I live. It is amazing. It is completely amazing how many are actually here. But I am finding this out more and more on a regular basis, and it's a scary thing, no doubt about it. All right, also, down off of the AFP, we have got, here we are. Now, this one here, this is something I think you're going to be hearing more and more of over the next couple of weeks. The U.S. commander in Iraq voiced concern over the country's political stalemate in an interview published today, warning that failure to form a new government could undermine Iraqis' faith in democratic rule. Now, General Ray Odierno, who will step down as the top U.S. officer in Iraq on Wednesday, told the New York Times that he hoped negotiations to form a government would prove successful and that Iraqi politicians probably still required 4 to 6 to 8 weeks. But if talks break down, there was the possibility yet another election would have to be called, he said. If it goes beyond 1 October, what does that mean? Could there be a call for another election? I worry about that a little bit. He said mounting frustration over the political deadlock carried risks for Iraq's fledgling democracy. The longer that takes, the more frustrated they might get with the process itself, Odierno said. What I don't want is for them to lose faith in the system. The democratic system. And that's the long-term risk. Do they lose faith in the process? Odierno has presided over a drawdown of U.S. forces, which now number less than 50,000, with President Obama set to mark the formal end of the combat mission by September the 1st. The remaining U.S. troops are charged with the task of advising and assisting Iraqi forces, but American officials had expected that Iraq would have a new government in place by now. If we get the government formed, I think we're okay, Odierno said. If we don't, I don't know. Odierno also said the U.S. military had learned difficult lessons during its time in Iraq and that Americans initially did not understand the country they had invaded in 2003. We all came in very naive about Iraq, he said. Asked if the United States had aggravated Iraq's divisions, he said, I don't know. There's all these issues that we didn't understand. We had to work our way through, he said. And did maybe that cause it to get worse? Well, maybe. All right, folks, this is something that's going to bear some looking at here over the next few weeks. And I would point to our own history and the history of many other countries out there in what it took to form a government. All right, nobody ever formed a government that was successful under duress from some outside government. All right, and I mean that. Look here at our own country. You know, our Constitution took 2 years. 2 years to put together and finally get itself ratified. And it was a long 2 years with many, many debates being held about it. Many continental conventions, and lots of stuff happened. I mean, you know, witness the dates on the Federalist Papers and on the Anti-Federalist Papers. You know, we had quite the debate in this country for a long time over whether or not we should even have a federal government, you know, let alone how it was going to function and how it was going to operate. Note also that even after we had it ratified, they still had to go back and fix it right away with a Bill of Rights. We had to put the Bill of Rights in there before it got ratified. But the fact of the matter was, folks, you can't expect the Iraqis to jump up like this, to move out of a Stone Age, tribalistic, tribalistic is probably the wrong word here, you know, out of a collectivist society, you know, and into a society that embraces individual rights on an overnight basis. You know, it's been my contention right along here that the proper way to do this would have been to completely take over, occupy the country, and liberation, so that they could get a grasp on our values and our morals. You know, and this is the kind of things that worked for us. That's what made America successful, was our values and our morals. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it was all Christian morals, which, although obviously had quite a bit to do with it, you know, but our values of liberty, our values of individual freedom, our values of equality, you know, these are people who have never, ever, ever believed in equality. You know, if you were born into a lower class over there, you knew your chances of getting out of that lower class were nil. And any attempts you might make to get out of there would probably result in your death. All right, that's the way collectivist societies have always worked in the past. It's the way they're going to continue to work into the future. And don't make no mistake about that. You know, people are very jealous of, you know, holding on to their positions in society. They gain their money through the force of arms. Everything that goes on in a society like that is done through the use of force. Saddam ruled with a brutal hand, you know, and he ruled it with a class of people that wielded a brutal hand. You know, Saddam Hussein did not rule Iraq by just driving around in a Jeep with Uday and Qusay and shooting anybody that got out of line. You know, his regime, and I quote the word regime here, or stress that word, you know, consisted of thousands and thousands and thousands of people who wandered around and who, you know, who Saddam paid well, you know, to make sure that the people were kept in their place. You know, and this is the kind of thing that has gone on in their societies for thousands of years. It's not the kind of thing that they're going to break out of easily. Not at all. You know, the individual rights, no, you don't have individual rights. Okay, the rights over there belong to the group of people. You know, if you are asked to sacrifice anything for the larger group of people, you are obligated to do this. You know, make no mistake about it. That is a fundamental tenet of any collectivist society. It has always been a fundamental tenet. You know, as I've always said before, if you want to take a look at the difference between the fundamentals, just take a stop and think of what it would be like if someone asked you to become a suicide bomber. You know, for any reason whatsoever.
There isn't an American out there, liberal, conservative, Republican, or Democrat, that doesn't laugh at the idea of becoming a suicide bomber for any reason whatsoever. I'm just going to say that there are no nut jobs out there that wouldn't, all right? But those nut jobs are not the normal course of life. Whereas over there, it's another story altogether, all right? They have painted a picture for those people where the best thing they can do in this life is to lose that life for everyone else, because your life is owed to everyone else. It's not yours to have, okay? The right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is not something that you would even cross your mind. And that's what it's really all about. You need to stop and think about this, you know? And that's the kind of thing that you need to break. You know, you need to break that cycle of oppression. You know, you need to break that cycle of classes. You know, look, the Democrats in this country, you know, in order to move forward with their collectivist ideas, will always point to the war between the masses. Let's stop and think about this for a second. You know, they're always, oh, the middle class, the upper class, the lower class. The lower class needs a break because they're being pushed around by the upper class. Blah, 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 blah. Most of us in the middle class, you know, really don't look at it that way, you know. I do not see this country as having a class system. I never did. I still don't to this day and time, you know. I'm sorry, but I have worked alongside of very, very rich people, and I've worked alongside of very, very poor people. And you know what's the one thing that I found out in the end? They were all people. They all got up in the morning, they all put their pants on the exact same way as the rest of us. One leg at a time. You know, there are those who have made their way forward that I have admired, you know, because of their brains, their talent, their initiative, you know, their penchant to work hard at something, you know, the fact that they learned to enjoy the hard work that they were putting into things, it produced the hard work. You know, stop and think about anything that you were successful at. Think about anything that you were successful at. Think of your talents. You know, whether your talents include playing in some sport, you know, whether it's golf or it's bowling or playing softball, or whether you're talented on your job and you like your job, you know, whether you're talented as a musician or what have you, you know, those talents got developed through you working very, very hard at it. You know, and of course, if it's a talent that you enjoyed, you're going to sit back and say, what hard work? I had so much fun, it wasn't funny. You know, I sit down and think of all the times, that, you know, just playing the guitar over the years. You know, I could think of one period, you know, 4.5 years long, where I studied 2 different guitar players and just went crazy just learning to play everything the way they played things, just developing my own skills. You know, you look back on it, I got to say, you know, Jesus, I did that every night for how many years? You know, I'd come home from work, I'd eat a little dinner, and then I would tear right into that guitar, and I wouldn't get up from the damn thing until the news came on at 11 o'clock at night. Was it hard work? Well, maybe. You know, did I play a lot of pieces over and over and over and over and over again until I got them right? Yeah. Was it a lot of hard work? Well, if you say so. But I got to admit, I enjoyed every bit of it, you know? Didn't get to be a champion lacrosse player because I just went out there and only played the games and never showed up for practice. You know, when we practiced, we had coaches that worked us to death, but we had fun at it. You know, and that of course is going to be the success to anything successful. But it was the individual talents that brought each and every one of us to that. And those individual talents are open and equally to all. The opportunity to develop a talent is something that's open and equal to everybody here. In a collectivist society, it's not. You know, they will determine what your talents are and what it is that you will do with it. You know, they always have. You know, collectivists that work in this country feel exactly as talents for doing something, you know, are going to have to be put aside for the greater good. You know, there are are things that the poor need. There are things that other people need, you know, that you are going to have to contribute to. It's always going to be asked for as a contribution, you know, but how is that contribution asked for? Is it something they come up and ask you to volunteer for? Or is it something that's demanded from you at a point of a gun? You know, that's bad enough. They demand your taxes at you from you at the point of a gun. You know, but let's face it, that's how it's done now, isn't it? You know, and to what end? You know, is it to any end that's going to actually work for you? You know, despite articles that are written by people out there or Yahoo News. You know, that depends on how many people you allow to stay in this government that have a collectivist bent to things, who feel that the government should be used to provide everything that everyone needs. You know, and I'm sorry, but that's just the wrong idea. And this is what's going to come about in Iraq. This is what you're going to have to look at over the next few months. You know, who is that's going to come to power over there? Will it be the power of the people with money who will be able to secure the guns, and with that money secure people who don't care about how they use those guns? It's all about, I mean, look at when we went over there, we opened up prison after prison that had 10 to 15 year old kids in it who were in there for nothing more than saying the wrong thing. Now stop and think about that. That's a tough thing to get over there, isn't it? You know, there was no freedom of speech over there. There was no freedom of ideas. You know, there was no freedom to have dispute with the quote-unquote leaders. You know, will it return to that? You know, well, that's what we're going to end up having to see here. And this is obviously what General Odierno, you know, is concerned about. You know, that's the whole thing. Don't forget one other thing here. Long-time listeners to this program. Colonel Alan West was on here one night and explain democracy in the Middle East in terms that you should all be able to understand. You know, democracy to people in the Middle East means, yes, we kill more people than you kill. That way we have more votes. You know, and that was something that he really, you know, he couldn't emphasize enough. He was absolutely correct about that, you know. When decisions are made at the point of a gun, well, that's what goes on there. All right, once again, I'm winding up on everything. Now, Joe Biden is actually in Baghdad today, you know, working on marking the end of the official combat thing that's coming down here. We also have got President Obama supposed to be talking to President Bush over what speech he's going to make on Tuesday. Or actually on Wednesday, I'm sorry. Yep, we got another day left in August. But it's coming, you know, and I can't wait to see exactly what's going to come behind that. There are other colonels and generals over there warning that some of the groups are ramping up their activity, waiting for this so-called end of activities, you know. Now, fact of the matter is that we are down to the 50,000 troops there, and Obama did say that we would leave 50,000 troops behind, you know, for security measures and to train the new government that comes in, or all the trained forces of the new government coming down the road here. We got to wait and see. And I will tell you one other thing that you really got to remember about Iraq, and something that really that went unnoticed by the left. And why it went unnoticed by the left, I don't know. But don't forget that interim Iraqi constitution that they're still working under. You know, it is a socialist document if ever there was one. They went right to Karl Marx to write the damn thing. You know, a government that will ensure that everyone gets an education. A government that will ensure that everyone gets health care. A government that will ensure that everyone gets a job. You know, all the same promises that socialists and collectivists have made since the dawn of time. You know, the exact same promises that were made to the Iranian people since the dawn of time. You know, things don't change there when it comes to that. You know, if you want to appeal to it, if you're going to make a democracy work, you've got to appeal to the masses. You know, tell them you're going to give them something for free. Tell them they're going to get something that they haven't earned that's going to give them a hand up. And you'll be amazed at how fast they'll vote for them. You know, once again, look at what's happening right here. Why do you think they're trying to keep the tax cuts for the middle class? You know, why do you think they look at the upper class as over 250,000 people making over $250,000, you know, being only 4% of the economy? They're looking at the other 96% that they want to get votes from. It's really what it's all about, folks. Make no mistake about it. Right where it's coming down, all the way down the line. All right, other things in the news here, just keep it up on top.
by Andrew Beattie down at the AFP here today. And once again, as always, the usual disclaimer, all articles read on this program are for informational, educational, and discussional purposes only. They were taken from the public domain and just spread around by me for no profit. Thank you very much. The U.S. government today slapped sanctions on 4 people and 8 organizations accused of aiding North Korea's government through illicit trade, the Treasury Department said. President Barack Obama issued an order freezing assets and imposing travel bans as Washington stepped up pressure after the sinking of a South Korean Navy ship in March, which was blamed on Pyongyang. Obama has also expanded the scope of U.S. sanctions to cover those involved in the trade in drugs and luxury goods to and from the dirt-poor nation. The U.S. placed sanctions on a secretive branch of the Korean Workers' Party, known as Office 39, which is suspected of selling methamphetamine in China and South Korea and acquiring luxury items for North Korea's leaders. The group is thought to be involved in a failed attempt to buy 2 Italian-made luxury yachts worth more than $15 million from North Korea's reclusive leader, Kim Jong-il. Among those also targeted were the head of North Korea's intelligence agency, Kim Yong-chol, who has been linked to the March torpedo attack that killed 46 people on a South Korean ship. Now, Pyongyang denies any role in the attacks. Green Pine Associated Corporation, a group said to be controlled by Kim Yong-chol's intelligence agency, was also sanctioned. The organization was accused of exporting arms or related material from South Korea and is said to specialize in the production of maritime military craft and armaments. Now, Green Pine has exported torpedoes and technical assistance to Iranian defense firms, the Treasury Department said. Other individuals, including 2 members of North Korea's General Bureau of Atomic Energy, were also sanctioned. Among those targeted were the head of the Atomic Energy Bureau, Ri Ji-son, and Ri Hong-sop, who, according to the United Nations, once rang the controversial Yongbyon Nuclear Research Center. The center is suspected of producing fissile material used in nuclear weapons testing. Talks to ease the nuclear standoff with North Korea have spluttered, but during a visit to China, North Korea's ailing leader, Kim Jong-il, reportedly backed the resumption of talks Monday. Chinese television quoted Kim as saying that North Korea's stance on ridding the Korean Peninsula of nuclear weapons was unchanged and the country is not willing to see tensions on the peninsula. Kim pledged to remain in close consultation with China and hope for the early resumption of 6-party nuclear disarmament talks that also includes South Korea, the United States, Japan, and Russia, it said. China hosts the 6-party talks, which began in 2003. The North walked out in 2009 and staged the second atomic weapons test a month later. Now, folks, it's something that bears watching on, and I've always said right along here that I will keep my eye on anything that's coming out of North Korea. Jimmy Carter was supposed to make his way over there last week, and there has not been a thing in the news about what he managed to accomplish or whether he even got there. But we will see. I don't know what the hell he's thinking of doing or where he's going. Well, actually, he gained freedom for one guy over there, somebody that we were holding, a reporter or something along that line there. So, yeah, maybe it wasn't all that unfruitful, but Christ knows what the hell he promised these people. At any rate, one of the things here in this that caught my eye was the fact that the North Koreans are making methamphetamine and selling it in China. Now, this is a huge no-no, selling drugs and importing drugs into China. It's not like here in America, okay, where it's a wrist-slapping kind of thing. It's very, very bad news over there. Now, whether the Chinese are going to make any sanctions against them or not depends on something else. All right, once again, you have collectivist societies that are ruled by leaders, okay? And these leaders over there, they make their way to the top through kissing ass and buying presents and doing what they do, generally spending a lot of time on their knees. Once they get to the top, they like to stay there and like to have the perks and like to have all the luxury items. Now, you got to imagine that if there was enough money coming in from the drug trade and other things for Kim Jong-il to buy himself a couple luxury yachts, and for the Chinese not to be ripping sanctions on them, has got to lead you to believe that the Chinese are also making money on this trade. And Chinese leaders are making money on this trade. You can't see it as being any other way. Because the Chinese are brutal when it comes to getting down on groups of people that they don't like. You know, we all know this. You know, look at the, I can't think of the name of the religious movement, or what they call a pseudo-religious movement going on over there. I want to say feng shui, but I don't think it's the right word. But the point of the matter is here, The Chinese are very tough on this. And if they're not getting tough on this, and you're not hearing things about it, and I gotta admit, I have not seen anything in the paper, People's Daily about it, you gotta think that there's some money being kicked back to the people who would have been doing something about this. You know, so definitely, I'm gonna be keeping my eye on this in the future. But right now, I gotta keep my eye on the clock. Gotta keep my eye on the fact that the waiters have, and the waitresses here have once again piled the chairs all high up on top of the tables. They've dimmed the lights. The maitre d' has got everything worked right up. Matter of fact, got his keys in the door and is looking at me with a weird eye. Yeah, go ahead, you can blast, but folks, it's time to close up the cafe. But as always, the bar will be open. Yes, the bar here at Politics Lobby for Patriots Unite Voice Room on Pal Talk will remain open for a while, and you folks are more than happy to come around and hey, hang out for a while. And we'll chat, talk about anything you want to talk about for a little bit here, folks. As always, the first round is on me. But I want to thank everybody for coming down. Thanks a lot. My name is Mark Belcher. I've been your host for the last hour, and I'll be back here every Monday night at 9 p.m., at least for the foreseeable future. And, hey, it's been 8 years. I think it's going to keep on happening for a while. But thanks once again from all of us over at HernCo.com. Thanks to Bob Hernandez, our producer, and all the fine people out there that are making this show a success. Good night, folks, and we will see you all next week at the Politics Cafe on www.hernco.com. Thanks a lot, folks. Good night.